Oh, boy. All right, Bill. This is going to be a serious conversation. And
just for the record, I was kidding. Just for the record, right. I was kidding.
Dr. Douglas McCoy, full-time visiting professor of sociology on the Chicago campus of DeVry University. First of all, Dr. McCoy, I apologize. Bill wanted Star Trek to be played, and I actually am one step ahead of Bill because during our interview, I was going to say no bones about it.
Yeah, you're good.
So,
you know, I heard that music. I thought, here we go again.
Yeah, I know. Boy, we were kidding, but whatever. Anyway, what you reached out to us and on a topic that we all would like to discuss, here's what happens. I go on the internet, I go on Facebook, and I see all these articles about here's what happened in other countries. Here's what happened in Australia when there was a mass shooting. This happened, sure. And there's never been another shooting again. There's a lot of discussion right now about gun control, and is it gun control that we need? Does the government have to jump in and make rules harder? Is it mental illness? Maybe you can help us make sense of all this.
Well, I'd be happy to. You know, one of the things that I find in our courses, I teach a number of sociology courses, and we focus on social problems and social issues. And, of course, one of those issues is gun violence. And I found over the years that it's hard to get American students to really understand the nature or the extent of the problem in our culture. So one of the things I did a number of years ago to kind of demonstrate that was just to kind of get a global perspective. So when we compare gun data, part of the problem is the U.S. is a very large country. We're 333 million people, right?
Yep.
So what I did was we looked at comparable countries. So like you said, Australia. Well, you look at Australia and you look at the number of gun deaths they have per year, and they typically have around 200. And so it's hard to understand how that matches with the U.S.
Right, because just in Chicago alone, we have, you know, so much more than that.
Right, in one city.
Yeah.
So to be comparable, we took nine countries, and nine countries whose population together is equal to or close to the U.S. But these are nine countries that have guns. They haven't banned them completely, but they have restrictive gun laws, or what I would call common sense gun laws. So, for example, the most recent data we have is from 2016. And in 2016, the U.S. population was 333 million. So you take the countries of South Korea, the United Kingdom, Japan, Poland, Australia, the Netherlands, Sweden, Norway, and I'm forgetting one.
Denmark.
So those nine together, their population is roughly 345 million. So actually more than the U.S.
So all those countries combined with their population equals the U.S.?
Yeah, basically, give or take a little bit. So then I asked students, okay, so how many gun deaths do you think, gun-related deaths in 2016, did we have in the U.S.? Well, the total in the U.S. in 2016 was 35,098, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we pondered that a little bit, let that sink in, 35,000 gun deaths. And 2016 was actually a very big year in terms of gun deaths in the U.S. And then I asked students to think, okay, now how many do you think in all nine of those countries together do you think we had? And we think about it, we throw numbers out, but the actual number is 1,293.
Jeez, that is a huge difference, a 34,000 victim difference.
It's not even comparable. I mean, it really allows us to see guns in a very different light.
So what do they do that we're not doing?
Well, you've got a variety of things that they're doing. And what I like to call common sense laws. And the first thing I like to point out is that there are countries that I don't put on that list because they have extremely restrictive policies. So, for example, Ireland. In Ireland, handguns are banned. They have hardly any guns whatsoever allowed in Ireland, but their gun deaths per year in 2016 was 0.08, like nobody. So I don't leave those. I don't use Ireland as an example, but all of these countries on this list have common sense gun laws. For example, the laws we've been talking about, preventing the mentally ill from owning guns, gun laws related to gun shows. And obviously the big one is assault rifles, right?
Yep.
Banning assault rifles across the board. All those countries, the one main thing they have in common is they ban assault rifles.
Doesn't a lot of this, Douglas, come down to the sense of entitlement that a lot of Americans have, even though you can show them how the rest of the globe has given in and saying, wow, it's too dangerous to have these assault weapons, these semi-automatic weapons. For some reason, Americans don't buy into that. They'll talk about laws that were enacted in the 1700s and
when muskets were the gun of choice.
Right.
So what is it about the American way of thinking that needs to change, and will it ever change?
So that's a perfect question, Bill. And what's interesting about that is that's actually not true. When you look at the sociological research on the perceptions of Americans on gun laws, you find that overwhelmingly Americans, both gun owners and non-gun owners, want to see change. So, for example, look at, I can break these down category by category, but if you look at just the issue of, let's pick one, preventing the mentally ill from purchasing guns. So 89% of gun owners think we should prevent the mentally ill from purchasing guns, and 91% of non-gun owners do. So
that's pretty close.
Well, right, but that's just one item. Then when you look at things like the do not fly list or banning assault-style weapons. So assault-style weapons, look at that one. 70% of non-gun owners believe we should ban assault rifles.
Only 70%?
77.
That's still low. These are non-gun owners. Only 77% think that assault weapons should be banned.
It's still a majority of Americans, though.
I expected it to be
more
higher.
All right. So, sorry, go ahead.
Just was astounded by that statistic.
Well, true. But I think for me, the issue is that when you look at all the data in each of those categories, even things like the no-fly list, the no-fly list data will make you feel better, Wendy. 84% of non-gun owners want to see a ban on people in the no-fly list, and 82% of gun owners want to see a ban for individuals on the no-fly list.
And forgive me for interrupting you, but what was the statistic before when I stepped on you about the assault weapons? The non-gun owners, 77%. What about gun owners? What was that statistic?
So gun owners for that is 54%.
Still over half.
Yeah.
But still over half.
So with those numbers, and they're devastating numbers, why can't we fix that? Why can't we change that? What's going wrong?
Well, you know, so that's exactly, after I lay all this kind of data out for my students, that's exactly the question we always end up at. And for me, now this is opinion now instead of statistics and data.
Yeah.
My opinion is it comes down to two things. It comes down to lobby reform, and it comes down to term limits. We don't seem to have, because you can break this data down by voting districts, by region, by state. And you look at those states or those voting regions, and you can see using the Pew Research data what the individuals within the district would want to vote. And yet you can see the way the representatives do vote. So we've lost our ability to pass legislation based on the concept of representing the individuals within a district. We're now representing those individuals who lobby and who fund our campaign.
All right, so that said, here's a question that needs to be asked. You mentioned the other countries of comparable size or population who are not having these problems. Do they have a form of NRA in those countries that is anywhere near as strong as it is in the United States?
Well, none of them have an NRA that's nearly as strong as it is in the U.S. The one that would be somewhat comparable would be Australia. But Australia is interesting. You know, in 96, Australia had a mass shooting in Tasmania that killed, like, I want to say 35 people. And within months, they passed sweeping legislation. They had a buyback program. And their approach is actually interesting. So technically, you can have an assault rifle in Australia. But here's what they do. You have to keep them at a gun range. So you go to the range, you check out your assault rifle, you use it there, but you leave it there. You're not allowed to have it on your personal property.
I like that.
Or your premises. So
brilliant.
There are examples globally of solutions that do make sense and have worked.
So when laws are enacted that quickly, that says to me that they don't have that attitude of, oh, this is not the time to talk about guns and gun safety that we pull out every time there's any kind of a shooting in the United States.
No, it took one to make change. We have these shootings all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the point. And when you look at the number of mass shootings globally, the U.S. leads the list by a drastic amount. We've had a total of 90 mass shootings in the U.S. The next closest country is 18.
Wow. Wow. We're talking with Dr. Douglas McCoy, a full-time visiting professor of sociology on the Chicago campus of DeRuyter University. If you want to jump in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. More after this on WGN.
The Real McCoys, starring Walter Brennan, created by Irving Finkus.
Want you to meet the family known as the
Bill,
Real
McCoy. Is everything a joke to you?
No. Felt bad. We played the Star Trek theme for Dr. McCoy, so I fixed it by playing the theme from The Real McCoys with the great Richard Crenna and Walter Brennan. No one's done that one.
I love that. I love that one.
All right, I also have Hang on Sloopy by the McCoys
that we
can play as well. But all right, enough of that. This is a serious topic, and we're getting a lot of interesting texts that people don't want to get rid of their guns. My question is, with this whole shooting that happened, all of a sudden students are speaking up. Why did it take this shooting for someone to pay attention?
Well, I think we have been paying attention. I mean, if you're someone who's passionate about this topic, I mean, you can't say we didn't have a huge outcry after Columbine. You can't say we didn't have a huge outcry after Sandy Hook or the nightclub or Las Vegas. It's just different types of outcries. So students right now are getting passionate. And I think we're responding to the fact that we see on TV, I saw the one interview with a student from Florida where he basically was calling out Senator Rubio and saying he was coming for him. And I think people are responding to that kind of passion. I mean, I have two high school children myself, and they will tell you that it's crazy to go to high school and to be afraid that this could happen while you're trying to go to school.
There was a little scare last week at my son's high school. I kept him home. It was not warranted to close the school, but it made me uncomfortable. He was uncomfortable. I was talking to another parent, and they said, yeah, my son has already figured out three exits to each classroom and where to go. And I'm like, kids have enough going on in high school, they don't need to be thinking about this.
Yeah, it's scary. But again, when you look at the stats in the U.S. compared to any other country, developed industrial country in the world, I mean, there are 7 children killed every day in the U.S. by guns. I mean, it's a real concern. It's a reality that we have to address.
Let's talk about the psychology, Douglas, for a second. Of any time there's an incident like this, gun sales rise. There's a story I read today about a gun show that was just held in the past couple of days in Tampa, where there were lines out the door to get into the gun show to purchase more weaponry.
Right.
What's that all about? Is it just the fear that people would have that maybe the government is going to try to do something and limit these weapons, so they got to buy them now while they can? Is that what that is?
Sure. So to get into that question, you've got to look at the qualitative research with individuals in our society. And what you find in talking with people who respond that way is that there's a fear. There's a fear of maintaining and protecting their family, maintaining their wealth. And it's also a response to the fact that our government has not protected us. I think there's a general acceptance of the fact that if we live in a country where there's 35,000 gun deaths a year and our government's failing to provide even common sense legislation to protect us, then my only option is to purchase guns and to protect us. And to be clear, I'm not anti-gun. You know, I have owned guns, but I think we need common sense laws to protect our citizens.
And I know that people who go through the proper channels to obtain a gun are not usually the ones that use them. I know that in Florida, this kid was able to obtain them legally. So in a way, that has to change. Someone thinks, what about making ammunition much more expensive and taxing it? Because, you know, smokers have to pay extra tax because it's not good for you. What about that, you know, taxing the ammunition?
Well, have you noticed that we've had lots of discussions about lots of interesting, creative things to propose? Banning bump stocks, taxing ammunition. In the end of the day, those types of things aren't the solution. The solutions that we've seen that have worked in other countries is simply banning assault rifles. You know,
could you specify assault rifles? Because there are people that want to know the definition. Because I said automatic versus semi-automatic. I didn't know the difference, and I was called to the table on that last week. So assault weapons mean what?
Well, in most countries that have banned assault weapons, they've banned both semi and automatic weapons. And think to yourself this. do you need a semi-automatic or an automatic weapon to go hunting? And if you do, you can have places, again, like the Australian model, where you can go and use those types of rifles. But in an urban environment, does the average individual need either a semi or automatic weapon?
Judy has a quick question. Judy, we don't have a lot of time, so hop to it.
Okay. I think also that our country has cut so far back on mental health facilities due to economics that the ruling out of who is cognitively, you know, safe versus not plays a part in it. And I've had a personal experience with somebody who was in a lockdown mental health facility and went, after being in there, went and applied for a FOID card. I called down to Springfield to make sure that that person would be denied because lots of things slipped through. And people are not coming forth if they have a family member or a friend who has a trigger temper and a form of mental illness in order to stop that.
Judy, that's a great point. And you also mentioned that healthcare is more important to some of the other countries than ours as well. Thank you so much for calling.
You're very welcome.
If I could jump in on that issue, you know, that's an excellent point. And are we going to be individually responsible to call the law enforcement or the state when we think somebody we know with a mental issue is buying a gun? And so this brings up what we call the Obama rule. In 2012, after the massacre at Sandy Hook, a legislation was passed that would prevent an estimated, I think, 75 or 80,000 people in the U.S. from buying guns with a mental disorder. But what a lot of people don't know is that one of the first acts that President Trump took care of when he took office was to repeal that. So we actually went through the whole process after Sandy Hook to pass legislation just on this issue, and it was rescinded by President Trump in February of this year.
Douglas, we're out of time, but there's an article I would love for you to read. I wish we had time to discuss it. It's at QZ.com, and it talks about how 3%, very low number, 3% of the U.S. population own half of the guns in this country. And it asks the question, why? Why do you need that much weaponry?
Well, I've got an even better one for you. 48% of all guns in the world are owned by the U.S., and yet the U.S. only represents 5% of the global population.
We need to talk again, and we appreciate you reaching out to us. It's Dr. Douglas McCoy, educational consultant, full-time visiting professor of sociology on the Chicago campus of DeVry University. Thank you so much for your time, and we will talk to you again.
I'd love to. Have a great day.
Thanks, Douglas. Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. We've got news next, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.